My new book, Facts That Aren't True, is out now. Don't forget about my other book, Rational Answers to Stupid Questions. Click the link in the description now. Is it your opinion that science is capable and pretty good at discovering accurate information regarding the natural world?
I would say, no, the scientific method assumes accurate information, then it can do experiment. I would say science, the method, isn't actually required to ascertain accurate information of the world. For instance, I can go out and do proper taxonomy of trees and animals and things just by classification and identity. Yep. And be able to come to some good knowledge based on what things are. And so that's a description of what something is. I hold that the scientific method gives us an explanation of what causes a phenomenon we see.
And do you think, so what you kind of said there was, well, there are other ways of ascertaining true knowledge. Like if I am hungry, I am not using scientific knowledge. I'm aware that I am hungry. You're wearing a red hat. I'm not using the scientific method to, so sure. That was the first thing I kind of heard from you, and I totally agree, but what I'd like to know is, you know, for example, you can't observe atoms, but we have a robust scientific framework that tells us that atoms exist and their properties of them. So I'm not talking specifically, I'm talking generically. I just use that as an example. So do you think that science is capable and very good at discovering accurate information about the natural world?
The scientific method, I would say, is not doing that, which is what's in question. If you're referring to science colloquially as a body of knowledge, then I would grant that. Specifically, I'm referring today to the scientific method.
Okay. So if this is like too much of a meta conversation, then that's fine. But what is it that you think the scientific method is not doing here, or is not good at, or is not capable of?
Making its way through. You mean in regards to evolution?
No, just in regards to the scientific method, because I'm asking just a generic question about the scientific method and being able to declare with confidence that these are true things about the natural world.
Gotcha. Yeah, scientific method doesn't produce truth claims, for one. It assumes truth claims, so we start with assumptions about the world. Mm-hmm. We assume that they're regular. We call them things. These are first order statements about the world. Scientific method is actually looking at a phenomenon in the world that's natural and asking a question of causality. And that's what the scientific method is. The scientific method doesn't actually produce truth statements.
But
it produces likelihood statements.
But I'm pretty sure you're conceding that the scientific method is a good method that gets us to drawing conclusions about what we think is what we think are the best explanations for what's happening.
Yes, causally. Yeah, I agree with that. Causally, but not what something is, right? So the scientific method doesn't tell us what something is, right? We declare what something is and we properly categorize. And then we go, for instance, the scientific method, if I watched, if me and you were on like a hike and we saw bubbling water out of the hot springs, right? You and I would both go, that's bubbling water, right?
I would hope so, yeah.
Yeah, but you wouldn't agree that we're doing science right there, right?
No. Yeah, I talked about this already.
Okay. Yeah, that's the distinction I'm making.
What I'm trying to ask, if there are scientific ideas you reject, and you kind of say that I reject that science has anything to say about what is or what is not true. But, you know, I would say
scientific method.
It supports like what is likely to be true. However, I'm pretty sure that there are all kinds of things you agree are true statements about the world that we couldn't know if it weren't for science. Like, for example, that radio waves exist, that atoms exist. So I feel like it's not exactly a contradiction, but I think I don't know. It doesn't seem coherent.
Well, Eric, do you agree that there's a difference between describing something in the natural world and doing the scientific method?
I'm trying to make is we arrive there by doing the scientific method. There are some cases where we need the scientific method to be able to do that.
No, hold on a second. We need the scientific method. Okay, wait. So first the question was, You agree that there's a distinction between describing the natural world and doing the scientific method. You said yes. Then you said you need the scientific method to get there. Can you tell me where there is you're referring to?
To being able to make, to be able to like make statements or have knowledge about the world.
You agreed that us both pointing to bubbling water is not doing the scientific method. So now it sounds like you're contradicting your
No,
previous statement.
because I'll explain it again. There are some things like the existence of radio waves that kind of knowledge can only be revealed to us if we go through the scientific method because it's not directly observable. I mean, the way we observed it was by doing science, but you need that specific framework in order to investigate it. So that's the issue I'm having with this. You
Is there a
say, I don't
difference?
think science is how you do that, yet I think that there are many things you think are facts about the world that we couldn't know unless we went through the scientific method. If evolution was true, what would the evidence look like?
If evolution was a scientific theory, that's what's in question. It wouldn't, if it were true, it wouldn't be a theory because theories aren't true. Theories are likely explanations of causal relationships between variables and phenomenon.
Yeah,
So
it's what we
again, your
mean by it's
question
what we mean by
assumes
true.
something. Well, no, because
Yes, it is.
things that we call no things that we call facts, for instance, that heat goes from hot to cold, right? We call that a fact, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Heat
Like
goes
a
from hot to cold, pressure goes from high to low. Okay, these are things we call true facts. We call them lawful. Science doesn't come to a theory and call it, it never calls it true, or otherwise it would be a law.
No.
Yes. Are scientific theories true, yes or no?
They are true descriptions about the world. I know that you think this because you think atoms exist and it's called atomic theory.
If evolution occurred in the grand scheme of things, I actually have no idea what it would look like, because I'm not sure what you're claiming is causing why the phenomenon. So, if someone said, there's a scientific theory I have that this process occurred and produced this observation we call diversity in life, I'm going to ask a question. Interesting. Can you isolate what you think is causing the diversity of life such that
You
you
can
can run it
save
through?
that for your cross-examination. My
That's
next
what I'm saying,
question,
is like your question has nothing to do with the scientific method.
I would
You're
disagree. We're
asking a
trying
philosophical
to
question.
no, we're trying to get
I
there.
thought you didn't want to do philosophy.
We're not. So I'm confused as to if you don't even know how to delineate the data that would say these evolutionary ideas are true or false. Why is it that you're claiming that evolution is not a scientific theory? And I know you also don't believe in evolution either. So why either of those things?
The topic of the debate, is whether or not evolution is a scientific theory. The question of
Yes. And you don't know
what
you don't know
hold
what
on,
kind of
I'm going to
data
ask, trying
that
to answer.
theory would produce.
Data, I'm not
So
interested
I'm
in data
curious.
because the scientific method,
Jim Bob,
is
stop,
more than
please.
data.
So you don't know what the data that would be produced by that body of knowledge that is the scientific theory would even be. So I'm curious as to why you think that it's not when you seem to be ignorant about how you would even ascertain whether or not it is.
Well, because if you say if evolution was true, what do you think it would look like? What would the evidence look like? I'm asking, what are you claiming is actually occurring such that I'm asking myself the question, did this happen? This is a question
I know that you
of
know what
causality, right?
evolution is. I'm not gonna spell it out here for you. The quest A scientific theory is going to consist of a very large body of knowledge that's been collected by going through the scientific method. There's no way that you disagree with that. So if evolution was true, what would that body of knowledge within the theory look like?
It would look like starting with an observation and taking evolution down the scientific method steps and arriving at a theory. That's what it would look like for me.
You're
That's why we're here debating
you're
it.
describing the process, not what is the data that would either confirm this idea or allow us
I
to be able
don't.
to throw this idea
I
out.
don't.
I
We
need to
don't.
know what the data would be.
We don't confirm scientific theories with data. We
Yes,
confirm
we
them with
absolutely
experiments.
do.
Oh,
what is it that the experiments give us to be able to draw conclusions?
Fair enough, but data. I'm not just looking at data without an experiment.
I'll ask it one more time, and then I think I know maybe a different direction we can go. If evolution was a scientific theory, then it would possess a collective body of knowledge that supports the theory. What kind of knowledge would the evolutionary theory contain within it?
What kind of knowledge would
what
the scientific...
What sorts of data would confirm evolution and be part of its theory?
What types of data it would include is... introduced causal mechanism that produces the phenomenon that's observed. It would include that data.
Okay, so I guess that's what we're going to have to go with. I don't really understand. Right. Do you agree or disagree that if evolution is true, then it would mean that all life on the planet is related?
If the theory of evolution were true, then... assuming that organisms are related still doesn't give you the process of speciation as a, some sort of
that's
mechanistic
fine.
Causal.
That's fine. Yeah. That's not required to know that organisms are related or to be able to test whether or not they are related. But it's very clearly an implication of evolutionary theory that all organisms on this planet would be related.
If you're just saying... all life has similar chemistry observably, and all life is bound to similar laws of physics and chemistry.
That's nowhere close to where I'm going with this.
Well, I'm saying relatedness, I'm just saying.
I'm talking about genetics. I'm talking about Darwin proposed that there must be a hereditary molecule, and that would be passed down from organism to organism, and that is what is responsible for the traits that organisms have. And the modification of that genetic molecule is what would cause variations in populations. And so it would change over time. Then he had ideas about what it could be. He called them gemmicules or something like that. Yeah. We know he was wrong, but we now know about genetics. And so anyways, go ahead.
So I'm just, I'm going to ask you, when you talk about similar, you're talking about when you say related, you're talking about similar genetic structure, right? Physical?
Yep.
Okay. So
does all life on the planet have that?
If you assumed that we're related because we all have similar material in us, how would you determine that we're not related but we had similar material in us?
Again, you're not the one doing the cross-examination right now.
Well, your question assumes this though.
That's how science works. Science is predicated on we take assumptions and then we go and test them. The way you stated that earlier was you kind of got it backwards. We actually didn't know how to test genetic similarities scientifically. I mean, we knew how to do it statistically within a species. Gregor Mendel unveiled that for us. But we didn't know how to really deep down scientifically test the relatedness between organisms. Like, we could see how closely related you and I are, or we could see, is there a relationship between species? Now, we do know how to do that. It was predicted. So evolution could have failed the prediction that all life on this planet would be related. And in addition to that, it predicted certain degrees of relatedness between organisms. We should be most closely related to the great apes. And then we should be more closely related to all mammals in general than to any other kind of life on this planet. Literally all of those tests have passed. So how do you reconcile the data that confirmed what evolutionary scientists thought would happen?
Well, I would reconcile it by calling it confirmation bias, because the question I just asked shows that it is. How would you determine any organism wasn't related to another organism?
If they shared zero genes, that would be how it would work.
Is everything related?
You're going to have to save that for your time. I only have 7 minutes left here.
Well, what I'm saying is that the assumption here is that everything's related because of similar structure and everything has carbon.
The assumption was that everything is related. That was the original claim. And then we figured out scientifically how you test that, and it confirmed it. And now you're sitting here saying, oh, just because they share genes, that means they're related.
That was how we confirmed
the idea. And
that's
now you're saying,
question.
Well, it's not.
Yeah, it is. I'll give you it. Premise one. MS1.
Jim Bob, stop. You can do this when it's your turn.
I'm not cross-examining. I'm correcting you.
Yes, but during a cross-examination, I get to decide how my time is used.
If you started with the assumption that everything is ancestral, and you started with that assumption, and you found a fossil, in this case, Tiktaalik, how could it not be a transitional fossil if you started with the assumption that everything's in transition? There's no such thing as a non-transitional fossil, which is question begging.
No, because the transitional fossils have predictable characteristics from them. We should also expect to not be able to find the organisms of the present in the past. And indeed, we don't. So... anyways, how is that anything other than evolution said we should find this thing, and then it did find this thing. What is your response to that?
That's starting with a narrative and finding evidence to support your premise one. It tells us nothing about whether or not evolution is a scientific theory.
This would apply for literally everything. Oh, you think the nucleus exists? Well, then the gold foil experiment that confirmed that's just
what
confirmation
exists,
bias.
We already explained this, and I completely, thoroughly made this distinction, is that what exists has nothing to do with, ultimately, what causes X. I already told you, we agreed that looking at a bubbling thing or a fossil, if we agree that's a fossil, if we agree what things are, we're asking a different question in evolution. We're asking a question about the observation that we see diversity in life. We're asking a question, what causes diversity in life? That's the question,
again,
right? That has to run through the scientific method.
This is a complete red herring. Yes, because we could apply it to anything that's scientific that you believe in. For example, do you think protons and neutrons exist?
I'm not sure. I didn't observe them directly.
I'll just conclude by laying out why what he's been doing here is a complete red herring. Protons and neutrons exist. Virtually nobody has a problem accepting that the scientific body of knowledge tells us that they exist. Nobody has a problem just saying that that is true. We could call it a fact. Now, but an observation that protons and neutrons exist, the experiments, like the gold foil experiment that confirms it, well, that doesn't tell you why a proton is positively charged and a neutron is neutrally charged. That tells you nothing about the combination of up and down quarks inside them that gives us its charge. You don't need to know that in order to be able to claim and declare and do science that supports that there are positively charged and neutral subatomic particles. So that is the end of my time.
In evolution, in the evolutionary theory, what's the observation?
There are like countless different kinds of observations you could make for evolution.
The best one that you think supports that it's a theory, the best observation you got.
The fossil record and genetics.
Okay, I observed a fossil or a collection of fossil, right? So the observation is fossils, plural, okay? Is the question, what causes fossils, plural?
What?
I'm asking you, if you found fossils, what's the observation?
Really quick, the fossil record was used to build support for evolution, but then there are fossils that were predicted to be out there that we then found. So the fossils are not just observations, and then we form a theory around the observations.
The fossils are the evidence that was predicted as well. Stop for a second.
Mm-hmm.
You just said we use fossils to support the theory.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't even get to the theory because you need an observation to get to the theory first. So you're starting with the theory, and then you're finding fossils. Mm-hmm. You have to do it the proper scientific way, which is start with an observation. You don't assume the theory because you didn't get there yet. You have to start with the observation, not tie an observation to your assumed theory. This is not science. This is pseudoscience. So again, if you're going to claim that you found fossils, is there something specific about the fossils you're calling your observation?
The characteristics of the fossils. So, for example, Archaeopteryx was predicted to have existed, before its fossil was ever found. It should have intermediate traits between theropod dinosaurs and birds, and it does.
Okay, hold on. Again, you're telling a story about the observation. In science, you start with an observation, just purely, and describe it, okay? So yeah. What are you purely observing with fossils, please? Very clearly.
The anatomical structure is the most obvious thing you can observe with fossils. And then by observing the anatomical structure of modern living birds and extinct theropod dinosaurs, the prediction that an intermediate fossil form should exist was made, and then it was discovered.
Hold on. We're not talking about predictions. We're starting with the scientific method. This should be very easy for you. Now focus.
It is.
The observation is the fossil exists, and it shows the phenotype, the anatomy of a certain bird-like creature, and you're comparing that to an observation you have presently with an anatomical similar bird-like creature, correct? That's the observation.
No, I said theropod dinosaurs and modern birds. So what was... Go ahead.
I'm just saying, in clear language, you're discovering a fossil and you're looking at its anatomy and you're comparing it to modern anatomy, right? In short, that's your observation.
Yes, because what evolution tells us is that the organisms of today are the descendants of organisms of the past.
Stop going to the I'm theory. Stop it.
I'm telling you the scientific steps.
You can't interpret the observation with the theory because the theory is at the tail end of the theory. You have to pretend you don't know what the theory is.
I'm talking Archaeopteryx was discovered only a few years after On the Origin of Species was published.
I don't care about the story.
Evolution was very much hypothetical at the time, and I'm telling you what happened when it was very hypothetical.
Before
the modern synthesis,
story. Stop the filibustering storytelling. I don't care about your stories. Observation. There is a fossil that has an anatomy. There is a current animal today that has similar anatomy, right? All I'm asking you is that the observation?
That's one of the observations, yeah.
Okay, let's start with that.
Yeah.
Thank you. That was really hard. Observation. Old thing has traits, typical traits, anatomy. Current thing has similar things, right? The next question in the scientific method is, what causes the similarity, right? That's your question?
I never asked a question. What are you talking about?
I know, because you didn't do the scientific method. Thank you. So the next question in the scientific method, Peterson, is you start with the observation, and now you're asking a question about the observation in nature, the similarities between these two things. So isn't the question, what causes the similarities between these things?
Yeah, and then that would be genetics, which was discovered farther down the road.
Hold on a second.
What is going on?
If the question is, what causes this phenomenon you call similarity in traits or anatomy, right? Your hypothesis is now this. What causes similarity, correct?
A hypothesis is not a question.
The hypothesis is positing X causes Y, correct?
Yeah.
Okay. So what is X in this scientific method? We got to the observation. We asked the question, what causes the similarities, right? You have fossils, and that's your observation, right? A fossil and the current bird that you're referring to. Hypothesis is X causes Y. So what is X?
You could say common descent. You could also say genetics.
Question begging.
No, it's
isn't
not.
Common descent to the theory itself?
It's an implication of the theory, yes, but we would look at...
So you can't...
We would look at any...
Stop.
Go ahead.
Common descent is a post-diction, basically story of what is occurring. We're asking for something that's X that you could introduce to produce similarities between X, these two things, right? The phenomenon is similarities in phenotype, right? So now we're asking a question, what causes similarities in phenotype? And you've skipped to common descent, which you can't introduce into an experiment. You can't introduce common descent and remove it. This is not science.
What? We do evolutionary experiments all the time.
I didn't ask if you think we do evolutionary experiments.
I don't think we do. We do.
I'm trying to I don't care what you think we do right now.
I don't think that we do. We do. Like, I can cite you some.
I don't care if we do right now. We're supposed to be doing one right now, dude. And the observation is similarity in phenotype between an old thing and a new thing. Question, what causes the similarity?
Common descent.
Hypothesis, common descent. So is common descent something you can introduce into an experiment?
Digging up fossils really isn't an experiment, but that doesn't make it not scientific.
That doesn't answer my question. This is cross-examination.
I'm pointing out the red herring of...
A red herring? You said X causes Y, okay? Is it correct that you're saying X equals common descent, Y is similarity between these two things?
I'd have to write that down to keep track of it. What I'm telling you is that the reason the Archaeopteryx transitional form exists is because theropod dinosaurs are the common ancestor of Archaeopteryx.
That's begging
and modern
the question, dude.
It's not begging the question.
Listen, I'm going to ask
there,
you.
Is
you need
evolution
to answer my questions
true?
Now.
This
no,
is the
no,
kind
listen.
Of evidence we would predict.
No,
it
no.
was found.
I'm not asking
supporting
for evidence.
Evidence
asking,
of X.
Stop it. Peterson, stop. This is my cross-examination.
I know.
Observation. We'll do this real slow. Observation. There's an old thing that shares anatomy with a current thing. I ask a question. What causes the similarity? Your hypothesis
it's proposed
is
that common descent causes
dude,
it. And then we found the evidence that confirms
hold
it.
Hold on.
Keep interrupting the minimum, please.
Stop it. Okay. You posit that a thing called common descent is the independent variable that causes similar anatomy, correct?
There's no independent variable
I'm
in
asking
doing...
a question.
And your question is flawed, which is why I'm informing you that
no.
doing paleontology doesn't have
it's
independent variables because it's not an
Thank
experiment.
You. Therefore, it's not science.
That's complete bullshit.
You can see it. Dude, does a scientific...
There are all kinds of things.
I'm asking the questions.
I'm answering your question.
No, you're not. Listen, you just said it. You conceded the debate right now. Why?
No, I didn't. You fucking moron. It doesn't... You don't have... No!
Can you develop a scientific theory without an experiment?
Absolutely.
You can. Okay, so what's the need? Why use experiments then if you could just develop theories without experiments?
Because they help.
They help? Okay, so I can just develop any theory without an experiment and you just believe it because I don't have an experiment to be the arbiter of two competing hypotheses.
There's more.
Over.
You literally started. You. We're actually doing this earlier. There's other kinds of evidence, like just mere observations, than experimental evidence. But that doesn't mean that it can't be part of science.
Observations is the first step, dude. I didn't say it's not part of science. I said observation is the first step. Now tell me, how do you arbitrate between two competing viable hypotheses without an experiment?
You can look for evidence, like let's say... I think that George Washington was actually a woman, and somebody else says, I think he was
a
man.
We go and
dig up his bones, and we find...
It's not even a scientific theory, dude. A scientific theory. We're talking... Scientific theory...
We're talking about how do you delineate information absent an experiment. No. It can be done. I just demonstrated to you that it can be done.
I did not ask if you can gather information. I asked you, can you develop... a rigorous scientific theory without the scientific method. Again, I'll read my opener here. Scientific theory is a likely explanation of what causes an observable natural phenomenon based on an experiment using the scientific method. The scientific method goes as such. Observation. Ask a question. What causes Y? Posit that X causes Y. Introduce X. Remove X. Repeat. Conclusion. Develop a scientific theory. Now, I've demonstrated that for your... quote, theory of evolution, when I ask you what's the observation, you say there's this anatomy we found. It looks like this other anatomy we have. Look at the similarities. I ask you, interesting, what causes the similarities? You say common descent. I ask you, can you introduce common descent and remove it? You say no. I say it's not a scientific theory. You say experiments are not necessary for scientific theory. Let's take it down a notch here. Let's say... Can I address that or not? No. So, okay. scurvy is a symptom, right? A set of symptoms. Scurvy.
I would call it a condition. The symptoms.
Condition.
Yeah. Sure.
Okay. Great. It's a condition. is it fair in the scientific method inside of natural science to ask the question, what causes scurvy?
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay. Could I arbitrate between two hypotheses of what causes scurvy without an experiment?
It wouldn't necessarily have to be a controlled experiment. You could literally just read ship logs and see, wait a minute, those people on that ship, they took, like, not freeze-dried, but, like, preserved vegetable, like, fermented cabbage, fermented foods, like, that was a way to, like, because they didn't have refrigerators, so they could get their dose of vitamin C. Nobody knows what vitamin C is back then, but anyways, you could literally just look at the historical record, and you could say, hey, wait a minute, these people were, you know, they had that kind of food, and then this other group of people, all they ate were, like, meat preservatives and crackers and things that. They got scurvy, and then they didn't. That would be supporting evidence. Now, ideally, you would go on to do experiments that help validate.
Hold on. I understand, Peterson, hold on.
Yep.
What you just said is that's an observation, and you're actually – that's the moment you're actually forming a hypothesis, right? Right. Looks like one ship had oranges and vitamin C and a way to preserve their nutrients, and that ship didn't get scurvy, but this other ship is missing something. That's a question, and I would argue, and I think you would agree, that that's actually where you introduce your hypothesis.
Sure.
Okay, so I'm asking you, again, if you have two competing hypotheses, right? Let's say someone else says that's not the case. Is there any way other than an experiment actually arbitrate between the two competing hypotheses?
Yes, because hundreds and hundreds and actually thousands of ships have sailed, and you could look at the records of all of them. You're not producing the data yourself. You're not doing the experiment.
That's an observation.
But if you say, yes, but these are observations that confirm what your hypothesis is. If, like, this is literally how studying the past works. Now, we can study evolution in the present, but like, this is a little bit of a tangent, but other scientific theories like the Big Bang, we don't recreate the Big Bang. We do recreate certain conditions to, like, know some things about the first moments of the Big Bang, but literally all of it is just observations. We did the math.
That's just data.
We said there should be these predictable things out there in nature that we
can
see,
them. Can false assumptions accurately predict phenomenon?
Seems reasonable that could happen.
Okay, if two different models or hypotheses are saying, look, I'm observing the data and you're observing the data, I think this is causing the phenomenon that's predictable. They both have a predictable element to them. One is true and one's false, or maybe neither are true, right? I'm asking you, if someone's looking at data of thousands of ships, I don't care if it's a million ships, and it looks correlative that the ships that have a food preservation technology and vitamin C don't get scurvy, and the ones that don't, they do get scurvy. That's an observation. That's data. I'm asking a different question. When we introduce a hypothesis of what causes the phenomenon, is there any other way to arbitrate between two competing hypotheses than an experiment? Your answer was, more data.
You.
No, you just said more data.
Yeah.
So no, the answer is no, because I just told you two people could have the same wealth of data and posit different hypotheses about the cause of the phenomenon, and one could be wrong or both can be wrong. The question is, how do you determine in natural science who's got the correct hypotheses other than an experiment?
I literally answered this question for you.
With more data.
What is it that experiments give us? More data. I'm answering your question. The data that is produced from the experiment can absolutely exist in other cases that have already occurred. So there's meaningful difference. Experiments are great because you can control
things. Hold on a second. I want you all to listen to what he just said. The data post-experiment is no different than the data pre-experiment.
That's not at all what I said. I said the data that is yielded by an experiment is in no meaningful way different than the exact same kind of data from the exact same type of scenario you would set up with the experiment, but it's already occurred.
Okay, so here's the thing. If you're... The question isn't whether or not you call the results and information you gain from an experiment data. That's not what we're talking about, right? We're talking about whether or not pure data without an experiment can give you a likelihood cause. And I'm saying no, and you're saying yes.
That's because you're wrong. I can explain it to I can explain it to you.
Can you develop
time.
A theory? Can you develop a look, let's do it again. There's a ship that comes in and they're sick. There's a ship that comes in that's not sick. We look at the contents of the ship. We see the one ship that's not sick has all of this stuff, right? Vitamin C, preservation. The other one doesn't. We make a correlation. We go, this is pure data right here. We can actually work with this data, right? I'm asking a different question. Can you develop a scientific theory of what causes the condition, illness, without doing an experiment?
Yes.
So why does science need experiment then?
Okay, let me try to bridge the divide that we have here. I think how this originally started was you were trying to get me to tell you how could you get data to support it without the experiment. Now, two ships come in, we make an observation about this ship has a bunch of scurvy, this doesn't. We look at what kind of foods the one ship had, we look at the kind of foods the other ship had. We build a hypothesis that says it's due to these vegetables and fruits or whatever. We don't have to run an experiment to get data that confirms that, because we could literally just watch every single ship that comes in after that point, and we have nothing to do with the way it's set up. Those kinds of things are sometimes called natural experiments. So you can do all of that without setting up, like in a lab or whatever, the conditions for it. Now,
don't filibuster. Don't filibuster.
Well, no, I was actually going to try to agree with you.
Okay, go ahead. I'll let you just, good faith, go ahead.
I will absolutely agree that ideally you would want experiments, like controlled experiments or whatever, because they eliminate a lot of external variables that allow you to laser focus on what you think is happening.
Okay, I'll ask a question. Let's say we didn't know what caused scurvy and there was a grant out with two scientists, right? If one scientist was you and one scientist was me, right? And there was a reward for who can develop the scientific theory of what causes scurvy, would you go ahead and present just a correlative argument of the data between ships, what they have and what they don't have, and one clearly correlates to the sickness and one doesn't? Or I do an experiment introducing oranges, introducing and removing oranges and food preservation technology, and I repeat that over and over again. Who's going to get the second grant, me or you?
I don't know.
I am. Why? Because I developed a scientific theory using an experiment, and you didn't develop a scientific theory, and you just merely made a correlative assumption. The difference between a correlative assumption, or let's call it a hypothesis, and another hypothesis is the only arbiter for who's correct in their hypothesis is an experiment.
Jim Bob, the problem there is you and I are going to have the same data. It's just that you obtained your data in a different way. I'm going to have data that says if they eat fruits and vegetables, they don't get scurvy, and so will you.
Oh, you didn't. The same data that's happening, for instance, let's say, I couldn't think of a more simple example than this, but I'm going to have to try to think of an even simpler causal example. Let's say poison. Okay, let's say someone's poisoned, and we don't know what caused it. What's the poison, right? You say, well, there's a bunch of poison in this room that's kind of toxic, so it's probably that caused it. And I go, well, there's a variation of poisons here that may have caused it. And you go, yeah, there might be a variation of poisons that caused the death of this person consuming it. You're saying you to develop a scientific theory, you don't actually need to introduce the poisons and test which one causes the kind of condition or death. You can just assume because there's poisons around that your scientific theory is pure data. There's poisons and maybe he ingested poisons, right? That's all you're saying, right? We have access to the same data. The problem with your pseudoscience is that the only way to develop a scientific theory, Look, I'll make it simpler. I choose one poison and you choose another. They're both in the room, right? Peterson goes with this one and I go with this one. I say, oh shit, Peterson, we have competing hypotheses. How are we going to develop a scientific theory of which of the poisons killed this person, right? Can you imagine the coroners taking Planet Peterson's approach to science? Can you imagine that, what that would look like? They don't need to do a scientific experiment to investigate what causes.
In the 1800s, like literally what you're talking about, John Snow in London in the 1800s did this. He was noticing cholera outbreaks, and what he did was he mapped all the city's wells, and then he mapped where like human waste was being dumped, and then he thought that it was caused by the human waste, and then he mapped out the locations of all the wells in London, and then the locations of where the human waste was being dumped, and he found, look, the cholera outbreaks are happening in these specific spots,
that's
and
correlative
they're not
data.
Happening in these other spots.
That's correlative data. That's
now,
great and useful.
What you could
we agree.
What you could do from that point to advance the theory is say, okay, well, why? What causes cholera?
Well I think that
it's not just poop, it's bacteria in the poop.
That's
so you
right.
can advance
yeah,
the
we're
theory
getting
that way. Yeah.
Well,
but
you're pretending that you can't get the same kind of data. Stop.
Yeah, I stopped.
You just posited the hypothesis. You said advance the theory. No, you don't. Can you get you're basically saying you can get a scientific theory without doing comparing and arbitrating between the two hypotheses. Okay, again,
yeah,
Eric, we're at a party. It's a murder mystery. There's a death. Peterson says, dude, that shrimp has poison in it. And I go, dude, this other thing, there's a poison bottle right here with a jabber on it, like a little pricker, right? And you go, well, I think the shrimp caused the death. And I go, I think this poison caused the death. Right? So the question is, how are we going to arbitrate between your hypothesis, the shrimp caused it, and my hypothesis, if we have the same data? There's data. There's shrimp. There's this. There's a dead person. How are we going to arbitrate between the two competing hypotheses?
You could, in real time, have different groups of people eat the shrimp and then collect data that you could collect.
Is that a scientific experiment?
You could collect data in the present.
Is that a... Hold on.
Or you could get the exact same kind of data by looking at events like this that have already occurred.
Dude, what you just said is feed the rest of the group different things. I agree. Yeah. The two maniacal scientists... Hold on. How else? No. You just said the proper way. Introduce the variable X shrimp and variable X1 poison... Inject people with it, and then that's an experiment.
Yeah.
And then you could tell what happened, right? I'm saying, how would you know, other than doing that, how would you know what caused the death?
Again, you could look at, it's kind of weird to call it a historical record in this case, but we could look at, like,
and let's try to keep it all on topic.
This literally does happen. I mean, we're seeing it with outbreaks of avian influenza now, or like with the E. coli outbreak with McDonald's. We already know that E. coli causes food poisoning, but it's like, well, was it from the lettuce? Or actually, it was from the onions for McDonald's. Let's track down the onions. Let's track down the farm. Let's track down the distribution. Let's look at the cases of people getting sick around the world. We're not performing an experiment, but we're confirming our idea there nonetheless.
Look.
Experiments
are great.
It's not the only way.
I didn't ask about what you think confirms, because there's two different hypotheses that correlate with the data accurately and accurately predict. If the fact of the matter is two competing hypotheses could both correlatively predict things, we're asking a different question in natural science. You said that E. coli, we know E. coli causes this. Well, that's interesting, because that's a claim of natural science that E. coli causes this type of sickness, right? We wouldn't know that unless we isolated E. coli and introduced it into bodies to see what it caused to do. Now, if there's a whole shit ton of food and it turns out that people are eating all sorts of food and lettuce is one of those foods, we have to determine which food correlates to the sickness. Now, with higher resolution, we look at the lettuce and we go, oh shit, it's nothing about the lettuce. There's actually something on the lettuce, it comes from feces. It's causing this. Let's say we didn't know what E. coli was, but we only knew that lettuce seemed to be the correlative agent here. Well, the only way you can develop a scientific theory in regards to the data you have is to investigate what it is that's actually entering the body, introduce it to the body, remove it from the body with two sample sets, do a scientific experiment, and then see what happens. Is it null? Does it verify your hunch that this little microscopic piece of shit went into someone's stomach and caused all this brutality internally? Yes, you can actually introduce it. That's the problem, to tie it back to evolution. The observation is fossils in the past look like fossils in the future, or not even fossils. Looks like something in the past. They have similar traits, right? I ask, what causes this? Peterson says, common descent causes this. I say, interesting. How do you introduce common descent and remove it such you know that it's causal to this phenomenon? He says, you can't do that. That's a
No, you
concession
can.
that you can't, no, you can't introduce and remove common descent.
Well, you
Tell me
can't
how.
in you can't intro okay, you can't remove it because you
A
can't
case in
change the
point.
past. If
You can't take it to the scientific method then.
yes, you
New
can. We
hypothesis, please. No, new hypothesis, please.
do evolutionary experiments today.
I didn't ask what you think we do. I'm asking you specifically about this
What kind of
observation and
statement is
your.
that?
Dude, listen to me. Observation, again, there's a thing in the past that looks like a thing in the present. They look similar. The question is, what causes them to look similar? You say a common descent. That's like a category, right? A common descent. This occurs, okay? So, how do you introduce common descent and produce the phenomenon, remove common descent, and see if the phenomenon's still there?
1 minute left.
So, really, all you're saying is we can't make the
I
course
asked a
of
question.
history.
I
I'm
asked you a
answering your
question. This is
question.
cross-examination. Don't tell me what I'm saying. I asked you a direct question. How do you introduce common descent and then remove it to know that it's causing the why phenomenon?
The idea that because we can't rerun the course of history means that you can't that evolution can't be
Fading.
like a scientific theory
Fading. I didn't
is
ask for a
so
meta. I didn't
completely
ask for a
stupid.
meta. I did not ask what you think is stupid. I asked you if you're saying in natural science that common descent causes the Y phenomenon. I ask you a scientific question. How do you introduce the independent variable common descent into a situation and remove it so you know that it's causing the phenomenon of similarities? Just say you can't answer it and go to a new hypothesis, dude. Bite the bullet.
No, well, we could confirm
No,
it in
you're going to
different
double down?
ways. We could test the genetics of archosaurs
Time is
and
up.
birds today,
You
and
want a
then we
fish?
could, I'm addressing this thing here. So we could confirm it in the present by testing the genetics of archosaurs living today and birds living today, because that is the data that would be predicted by common descent, and then we find it. So, anyways, we're out of time, but.
To the discussion earlier, are ethical concerns considered when suggesting that poison ought to be administered to gain data about poisons?
I would say that is I think the medical field does have a blurry line that I'm not fully I don't have a full position on, in fact, in regards to how much we test existing humans. Some people extend that to even animals. But I think Peterson and I would both agree that the best way to know what causes phenomenons inside the body in regards to health and conditions would be a direct exposure to the thing itself. We just have to go like, well, how much do we want to do this? What extent?
And Peterson?
There's in Malcolm Gladwell's book, David and Goliath, there's a really interesting piece in there where he talks about, I can't remember the doctor's name. Here I look it up. Dr. Emil Friedrich, something like that. So he was studying leukemia in children, in the like middle of the 20th century. Back then, leukemia was extremely deadly for children because they didn't know how to treat it. And what he did was he set up all these experimental treatments for it. And by doing those experimental treatments, lots of kids died horrible, painful deaths and didn't get better. But that research, was used to be able to create the modern like treatment plan for it. And now childhood leukemia has one of the lowest death rates of any cancer. So this is a very thorny and very difficult philosophical idea about what do we do about, even if you give people informed consent, you can still be subjecting them to misery, and are the trade-offs worth it, and so on and so forth. It's interesting. And it has nothing to do with evolution. The one of the most common flat Earth talking points is there's no independent variable for gravity, because like you can't take gravity out to confirm it. So that is the exact same kind of rhetoric, Jim Bob, I think you were using. So I am curious, if you accept the theory of gravity, why do you accept it when we can't manipulate gravity as a independent variable?
Yeah, well, first of all, that's a genetic fallacy, and it's also well poisoning. The validity of a statement has nothing to do with who else says it, first of all. To gravity, I would call gravity more law than anything. The same way it's a law that heat goes hot to cold and pressure goes high to low and other things, I would say that gravity, the effect, seems to be a law-like effect. When you start to make claims about what causes this effect, you're actually getting into natural science, and I agree with those terrible flat earthers that you are talking about, that you really can't introduce the cause in this scenario. You have to just, which is interesting, is like, why, if something's law-like, why don't you just describe it as law-like, and why double down on the cause if you don't have access to the cause? That's a pseudoscience.
Jim Bob, great to see you today.
Thank
Sounded
you.
great. Not as funny as you usually are, Plant Pearson. Horrible job. A horrible job. I hope you do better. You started yelling and shouting at JB. That was the funniest thing. For once, somebody was funnier than JB. But anyways, Taco, thank you for bringing me on. I want to know, Plant Pearson, what's your contention and how do you actually understand? And I want to understand, maybe me, I'm the one that wants to understand, how do you actually contend, and how are you okay with major biologists being against the idea of evolution? For example, we have major biologists like right here. Her name is Lynn Margulis, and she's actually wrote a complete work against evolution and all of the Darwinism theories, and basically she tries to expand against evolution through natural selection and says that the natural selection has no power because you need bigger chickens to lay bigger eggs in order for you to get to a different species. It's impossible because when you do get these bigger chickens, turns out they become mutilated, unwell, they're sick. When you actually get to this kind of perfect chicken and you try to perfect the breed, turns out it's
What is your
unwell.
question?
My question is, what's your contention against major biologists being actually against the theory of Darwinism through natural selection? Let's start there.
We don't use Darwinism today. We have what's called the modern synthesis, which is a combination of Darwin's ideas, but also genetics and a few other things. Lynn Margulis, it's hilarious that you would use her. She doesn't reject evolution. Apparently, she rejected some ideas about, like, well, Darwinian evolution doesn't go far enough. She's one of the most important people in confirming the idea of universal common descent among organisms, because she was the one who pushed the, it was completely
Well,
theoretical. Yeah.
can I read you something from her? She
No,
says, this is an issue
no.
I have with
Stop.
Neo-Darwinists.
Taco, I'm
They try
answering this
to
guy's
add,
question.
can I just read it for a second? This is what
No.
I
Hey,
have with Neo-Darwinists.
let
Good
him respond.
God. Okay, go ahead, man. Go ahead. But she actually, I mean, if you want me to read it, she's very
Am I going to go on or are you
anti-Neo-Darwinist.
going to
She said,
keep
this is an issue
talking?
I have. Go ahead.
Anyways, so she proposed endosymbiosis, which would have been one of the steps in how we went from simple to complex life. And lo and behold, through genetic testing and a few other things, her idea about that was confirmed. So if she has some weird philosophical differences, or like she just rejects some ideas about Darwinian evolution or whatever, fine, so do all modern biologists, because we know things that Darwin didn't know in his time. But she does not reject evolution, she doesn't reject universal common descent or anything like that.
Well, I want to know exactly how do you feel about her statement right here. It says, this is the issue I have with neo-Darwinists, quote unquote, by the way. They teach that what is generating novelty is the accumulation of random mutations in DNA in a direction set by natural.
Is it, if you have another question, I guess you can, since you're up here, you can ask one more, but we're not going to go off on a tangent. We have other people that would like to ask questions, so please be very fast with it.
Well, Plant Peterson, honestly, what is your actual observational theory of evolution? I don't understand it. Like, for example, if when somebody came up with a theory of gravity,
Yeah,
we
you
were able
asked a
to
question and
observe
now
this
you're giving a
theory.
sermon. Can you shut up?
Okay, go ahead. Give us this observational. Where
Genetics in
can
the
we see
fossil
evolution
record. There you
happening
go.
everywhere around us, please?
Goodbye. Genetics
Thank
in
you,
the
Menard.
fossil record. Thank you.
Just answer that, please. I'll go.
Yeah,
Thank you for the
genetics in the
Menard.
fossil record. Thank you. Goodbye.
Can you, without an experiment, conclude why one route, right, ships from one route have scurvy and the other route does not?
Yeah, you could literally look at the historical record of all the other ships, which is not you doing an experiment. Like the Big Bang, for example, we didn't do experiments to find the cosmic microwave background radiation or anything like that. What we did was we made predictions and then we found the predictive data in nature absent an experiment. It's possible to confirm a hypothesis that way. An experiment isn't the only way. I'm not advocating for experiments. I'm just telling you that it's not the way that, or the only way, I guess I should say, that you would do that.
Isn't that just
But that
added
is
data,
for,
though? All right, you go ahead. Sorry.
yeah,
No,
that
of
is
course,
for
to
a
jump
hy-
in.
yeah, sorry. That is for a hypothesis. But here we're trying to get to a theory. You said yourself it's a hypothesis without an experiment. That's correct. But for a theory, you need an experiment.
What Big Bang experiments are there?
There are none.
It's called the Big Bang Theory. Thanks. Next guess.
I mean, it is called that, but it
Yep,
doesn't
there
have
we
to be
go.
one.
It's a scientific theory absent any experiments. Next guest.
So, you are a young Earth creationist, correct?
I don't really make a claim about the age. I'm not even certain how to even start pursuing that. I don't think necessarily there's any problem with the view. I'm just also would be agnostic about a 14 billion or whatever the number is at this point age. The concept of
Well,
age
let me
itself
cut
is.
through that then and just ask this. Which do you think is more accurate of a statement? The Earth is a few thousand years old, or the Earth is a few billion years old?
I would call that a false dichotomy.
It's really not. It's a really simple question.
Well, the fact that I don't know, I couldn't actually give you an answer.
You can, you don't have to know the exact age to decide which is more accurate between saying the Earth is thousands of years old and the Earth is billions of years old. It's the second one that I think is more accurate, but I don't know the exact age of the Earth. See?
Say accuracy assumes some sort of methodology to determine it, right? Yes or no?
So I'm just looking
Yes or
for
no,
which
dude?
you, what's
Dude, you're
your
asking me a question
opinion?
about
What is
accuracy, and
your
I'm telling
opinion
you,
of which statement is more accurate?
Hey,
The Earth is
if I
thousands
just,
of years old, or the Earth
if I
is
just,
billions of years old?
if I just told you I don't have a mechanism for accuracy, your question assumes accuracy is already established. I'm telling
I'm
you,
just asking
I
you to
don't
give me
know.
your opinion.
I don't know what accuracy would mean in regards to this question because there's no measurement and you don't even have the answer. If you were so certain here, when you say, I think the accuracy is closer to this, I'm telling you from my view, I don't have access to the methodology to provide what you call accuracy. I don't even know what the margins of error would be given that you have a method. You? What's the margin of error?
I'm muted.
What's the margin of error?
I think you're just trying to dodge my question.
That's a question to you. Ironically, you're just dodging my question. What's the margin of error?
I'm the one asking you a question right
Does
now that you clearly
accuracy?
don't want to
No,
answer,
no,
but
no. No, your question smuggles in a
let's
term
skip
called
past
accuracy.
it. Let's skip past it.
You can't even answer your own question,
Whatever
dude.
age
Get out of here.
the
You
world
can't
is,
even answer your own question,
whatever
dude.
age you think the world is,
Cool,
if
I
you
don't
look
care.
into the world, you
No
see
idea. I have no idea.
you see development, right? You see
I have no
geological
idea.
development,
I have no idea.
biochemical development, astrophysics.
That's cool. I have no idea.
All right. So is that it with him, Jim Bob?
Yeah, I don't have an idea. His question is, what's more accurate, a billion trillion or 1,000? I'm telling you, I don't even have the methodology and the margin of error to tell you what's considered accurate or not. And I'm asking, does he? He's just telling a story. And I'm asking, what's the margin of error for the mechanism or the way in which you're determining age is accurate, considering you're using the word accurate? And he just goes into a filibuster. He's losing his shit. Spurgin.
If you'd like to make a final comment, you're welcome to.
If you look out into the world, you see geological, biochemical, astrophysical, a ton of different kinds of development, including taxonomic and ecological development. Your contention is that all of this development happened in what span of years?
I said I don't have the capacity or knowledge to make the claim. Does that make sense to you?
But you did say that you think young Earth creation.
Thank you, Gundersmoot. We appreciate you coming up.
Evolutionary science can change theories every 3 months, and nothing detrimentally can affect the world. So that means this is not something even maybe worthy of us to even look into. So that means it's not even scientific.
Evolutionary science predicted insecticide-resistant bugs and herbicidal-resistant weeds and antibiotic-resistant bacteria, and that is a problem that we have to contend with in the world. And so, no, it actually does have meaningful impacts on the world, and it gives us the steps necessary for what to consider in the future and how to deal with those types of problems.
So how do you contend with, like, for example, the third wave evolutionist, which is that's who you are, right? You're not a neo-Darwinist?
I've never heard of a third wave evolutionist, so.
Basically, they say we're not creationists, but they say we're not neo-Darwinists either. Because that's the only other way you
have. I'll be whatever you want me to be, Daddy. What's your question?
So how do you explain you existing then and the neo-Darwinist being completely inaccurate according to you?
A sperm fertilized an egg.
Yeah, but how can you say, oh my God, we came up with all these amazing conclusions using completely wrong theory?
What wrong theory?
Basically, that's what the third wave evolutionists are saying, that the theory of neo-Darwinism is complete bullshit.
Maybe they're wrong there. I think like your Lynn Margulis quote, you're completely misunderstanding this. Lynn Margulis did not reject evolution. She just simply said that Darwinian evolution doesn't explain everything, because it wouldn't explain endosymbiosis, which was her theory that turned out to be true.
Who's that? I don't care about her. I'm asking
you. Literally cited her and quote mined her the first time you were up here.
You care a lot.
You care so much.
I'll cite her again. You know what she said? She said, this is the issue I have with neo-Darwinists. And when I said that, you said you're not a neo-Darwinist, remember? You said you were not a neo-Darwinist. That means you have to be a third wave evolutionist. Yeah? You're nothing else. You have no other theory to rely on. You don't know anything else then. You have nothing else. So when you're not a neo-Darwinist, and she says that neo-Darwinists, for example, rely heavily, they teach what is generating novelty is the accumulation of random mutations in DNA in a direction set by natural selection. If you want bigger eggs, you keep selecting the hens that are laying the biggest eggs, and you get bigger and bigger eggs. But when you do that, you also get hens with defective feathers and wobbly legs. Natural selection eliminates and maybe maintains, but it doesn't create. So basically, she doesn't even like the neo-Darwinists at all. And this is what you guys did. So you guys basically are claiming that the neo-Darwinists were so amazing. Evolution was amazing. You just said, you made this claim that evolution was able to reconstitute all this penicillin, blah, blah, blah. In the end, it turns out that theory is potentially completely wrong. How do you reconcile with that?
Well, you said maybe, potentially. I reject that it is wrong there. I take your maybe, potentially statement as weak as you presented it to me, and now I can sleep easy at night.
So what do you think of the theories that we had before the consensus, so-called consensus, kind of settled on Darwinism and common descent, etc.? Because obviously there were many theories. Some of them rather advanced among people who did not believe in common descent, or people who did not believe in some sense, even remotely similar to modern Darwinism. So, for example, Louis Agassiz and to some extent Richard Owen and Cuvier, Geoffroy, etc. So,
I know that the Lord Baron Cuvier and Richard Owen, they were really hostile to evolution, mostly because they just kind of found it insulting, the idea that humans were the product of it. I don't know specifically what they held to, though. If they were like great chain of being, special independent creationists, if they were what the hell do you call that? Some people believed in spontaneous generation as like an alternative. I don't know specifically what they believed in, but like spontaneous generation is some of the stupidest bullshit out there. And the idea of like this great chain of being or whatever, it's like, okay, do you have any evidence? No, then I'm not interested. So if you could be more specific, well, I could give you.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, they did not believe in spontaneous generation. Well, maybe they did believe in spontaneous generation, but I'm talking about the explanations for fossil records, for example. Right?
Pierre, when you're talking, could you please slow down just a little bit, please?
Oh, sorry. Yeah. So I'm talking specifically. So the example I want to bring up is the explanations and models of common descent that they had, right? So, for example, in specifically for Tiktaalik, for example, that you mentioned as a prediction of evolutionary theory, right? Mm-hmm. So in the book, in a book called, let me have a look. So Identifying Future-Proof Science. So I've not read the entirety of it, but it makes the case. It is by Peter Vickers from Durham University. He's philosopher of science. So it makes the case that the prediction of Tiktaalik, for example, could have been made in 19th century before Darwin, before common descent, based purely on the models that they had at the time, because they already knew about a succession in the fossil record. They already knew about like some, say, ecological relationships.
Yeah.
So some ecological correlations between things in there.
Yeah.
So,
Okay, that's a fair point. I would say multiple things. One thing I would say is they could have, but they never did. So is there actually any, like, if all you can do is post hoc rationalization, then does your explanation have any explanatory power? No, apart from post hoc rationalizations. The majority of people in Darwin's time that rejected his idea, they had some sort of teleological view of evolution. There's an archetype or like an idealized form that the species are progressing toward. So yeah, they would believe in evolution, but they would believe in this very weird idea of it that like emerging complexity and so on and so forth.
No,
we know that this is correct. They wrote extensively about this. It's called orthogenesis. This is well documented and known about. The other thing I would say is, like, for Tiktaalik or whatever, like, yes, you can make the post hoc claim that they could have made that prediction, but that is predicated on so much more than, it's not just the fossil, it's the genetics that confirm the degree of relatedness between organisms as well. What's that?
But for Tiktaalik specifically, there is no genetics there. I'm sorry.
Yes, I know, but we do know that we have like lobe-finned fishes, for example, and they are more closely related to terrestrial vertebrates than they are to other fish. So that is a direct confirmation of what you would predict based off of the structure of the fossil record and how life is proposed to have progressed to what it is today.
So let's say we have Linnaeus, for example, right? So he was already aware of concepts of homology and all the hierarchy, etc. So contrary to what you are saying, these people did not believe in great chain of being. They already had the tree. They already had the idea of homology. And so do you honestly think that Linnaeus would be surprised if you would tell him that there is some sequence of letters that is the genetic material, and it's more similar in these groups than in more distantly related groups? because he already
could Linnaeus engage in confirmation bias and retroactively fit those discoveries into his worldview? Yes, anybody could do that, but only one view predicted this.
But if it's possible, that means it's not a prediction of common descent specific.
Yes,
it's not. It's not related to common sense specifically.
It could literally be unicorn farts is the reason for it. Does that explanation have any predictive power? No.
What do you mean? So
Carl Linnaeus also believed that species were fixed and immutable. So I don't know why you're bringing up Linnaeus.
What Linnaeus believed is already enough to predict that he would have more similar genetic code, more similar genetic sequences in what he deemed.
They're
more related to organisms. Yeah,
then because, why did he not make that prediction? You're retroactively fitting in modern data with somebody else's belief and saying, well, it could work with that.
Data,
yes,
the
it could work with unicorn farts too. Therefore, unicorn farts is equally as valid as evolution or as whatever Linnaeus believed in.
That's not what I'm saying.
I know it's not what you're saying.
Saying
it's the equivalent of what you're saying. And you can see how stupid it is when I say it, but you don't see it when you're doing it.
Well, the thing is, so I'm saying that the theory of Linnaeus, for example, can accommodate the data of...
So can unicorn farts.
So
I believe that unicorn farts magically makes all the DNA of organisms look the way that it does. There.
So did Linnaeus have a scientific theory or not?
Did Linnaeus come up with a scientific theory? No.
Yeah, did he have a theory of... say, of relationships between different organisms.
What?
Did he have a theory?
We'll do one more question and then we need to move on. We need to get to conclusions at some point.
Linnaeus knew nothing about genetics, and as far as I am aware, he made absolutely zero predictions about if there is a hereditary molecule or anything like that. Linnaeus also specifically thought that species were immutable, which means they are fixed and they don't change because he was a creationist.
Exactly.
Yeah, so there's nothing about genetics that you can glean from a Linnaean worldview. You can only post hoc
had the same
fit
tree
data
and
in
he
there.
Had ways of building
we're,
it.
We're not doing debate. I feel like he's answered several questions there. We're not going to debate.
I would say I would reduce it to similarity in function. So if your question is, well, what else accounts for similarity in function, I would then make, I would actually argue a teleological argument that there's actually a reason that requires a larger worldview than just naturalism to look at the world and say, it seems to be the case that it's geared toward coherency, functionality, survival, and these kinds of things. And genetics is basically the coding, if you will, I know you guys don't like that term, that instructs the organisms how to live, what to do, when to multiply, how to react to stimuli, how to adapt, these kinds of things.
Yeah,
code is embedded to response, right?
Yeah, there's a huge problem with that. In that, like for example, a shark and a whale, or a shark and a dolphin, they are like externally designed to survive very much in the same way, in the same kind of environment. However, the genetic overlap between hippos and dolphins is vastly greater than it is between sharks and dolphins. So that explanation falls apart pretty badly.
No, you used my explanation because you, in your first statement, Peterson, said the code is geared toward survival. Does genetic coding have any direction toward it? Instruct the animal? Does genetics itself instruct the organism to do, to react or do anything? Is it instruction? It to do something
in large part. Yeah, I mean, we know that.
Yeah.
Like, you're not, I thought you were going to talk about like guiding, like why their body looks
I'm
the way
saying,
it does. Yes, clearly, but behaviorally too, as well.
Okay, are there phenotypes that look similar, but they're not genetically similar? Okay. Would you say the explanation for something being phenotypically similar but not genotypically similar is function?
Well, I would say this is a phenomenon called convergent evolution or parallel evolution. The ultimate explanation for that, like weirdly, in a sense, dumb luck is a big part of it, but selective pressure is one of the main reasons why. So, like for example, in Australia, there are animals that look and behave exactly like moles, but they're not moles at all because they're marsupials, and a mole is a type of, I think moles are rodents. I'm not 100% sure. But if there's a niche that can be exploited, then any organism that has traits that are favorable toward that niche can, selective pressure can push it to become more and more specialized for that niche.
I understand, but what I'm trying to point to from just the physical perspective, from just strictly the natural perspective, there are things like wings that are phenotypical, and they serve a function, right? And there are things that have similar similar phenotypes or anatomy that aren't genotypical, like you said, the mole. But I'm saying that from that view, why is it you look at similar anatomy, but ultimately you look at genes themselves as structures themselves, just smaller structures, but you say they're similar, therefore it means something else, whereas anatomy is just a larger way of looking at physical structures. So isn't it the case from your view that genes themselves are physical structures?
So real fast, we'll get through this. There's no more audience questions. So once we get through this, we'll go ahead and move into the closing so that y'all can go grab lunch or whatever you need to.
Sure. It's kind of a reification fallacy to say that genes are a structure because genes are very, very, very nebulous. Now there are sequences of DNA that directly code for a very specific thing, like for eye color in humans. There's literally just a gene for that, but for the vast majority of traits for organisms, it's a extremely complex symphony of many genes interacting together to produce that trait. So calling the gene a structure kind of falls apart because of how much modification of the sequence of DNA happens between transcription and translation and all this other stuff, and how well that would be the main thing. I think I don't want to ramble.
Yes,
too much.
You see what I'm trying to. Can you understand from my view what I'm trying to frame is like what is essentially the meaningful distinction? And I understand you're saying, well, they're actually reification. By the way, so we agree. You mean you're referring to something that's kind of conceptual or not material, and you're assigning it to just strict structures, right?
It's in this case reification is where you say a complex phenomenon is a real thing, like the economy. Yeah. There isn't an economy that actually does things. The economy is emergent.
So what would the word you'd be using to say that it doesn't really exist in that way? What specifically is it coding, the code part, or is it like what is it specifically you're referring to? The sequences itself is like sort of like a metaphysical claim about the structure, but it's not identical to this. Is that kind of what you're saying?
And to be clear, this was the audience question portion, and we're moving back into an examination. So we'll do this last one since y'all are cool with going back and forth here, and then we'll move into the conclusions.
I think what makes it messy is like gene is a noun, but it's kind of hard to actually pin down. But genetics is more of like a verb. It's a process whereby things occur, you know? So that's what makes it really complex. But anyways, what I would say to sort of get back, and I think this will wrap this up pretty well, is, well, why is calling a gene different than anatomy? Because a gene is just a structure anyways. What I would say is, well, but the anatomy was used to make the prediction about genetic composition, like what are our ideas about genetics, and then those ideas came true. So the genes don't stand on themselves as this independent thing that could be whatever. It was a prediction of this other stuff that brought in that.